Okay, so we'll start with the Metta Sutta.
This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, or meeting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, nor despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill-will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
So when we look at the experience of meditation, why do we come to practice, and what are we actually looking for? So, have we got any beginners here tonight? We're all beginners. I've got one person. Okay, so I won't get too complicated. So, like, meditation in itself has many, many benefits, and the vast majority of you are well aware that meditation brings about some, say, obvious effects on oneself as a person, one's personality, one's outlook on life, and so meditation even is a very, very simple kind of practice, you know, just focusing on the breathing or maybe compassion, loving kindness, or the walking meditation. You know, different meditations suit different people, so each person finds what actually suits their character, and then just over time you make slight adjustments, you work with your practice in different ways to get good results. So as you do, the most obvious things you see with the practice that most people look for is in increasing peace of mind and resistance to stress, freedom from anger, you know, increasing patience and tolerance. So there's many, many things. You know, there could be like a dozen effects that each individual could see as you develop the practice over time. Because it's essentially the meditation, it goes like right through you. It just doesn't say linger at the surface level. You know, just making you a little bit peaceful, maybe a little bit more patient. But it goes over time, over many months, over years. It goes right through you. Say like to the core of your existence. So that might sound a bit of an exaggeration, but it's not really, because you get people who've been meditating for say 10 years, 20 years, and you know, you can see like a transformation in the character. You know, you'll see a person who has very, very good qualities, and they don't do anything absolutely incredible. All they do is like maybe meditate every day, and you know, they don't do things like psychology courses and lots of counselling and like relationship dynamics and all this other fancy stuff that people can potentially do. But the meditation in its essence is quite profound. It goes right through your personality to every say corner, every nuance of your being over time, over many, many years, and you get this very, very beneficial transformation of the character over time. You know, when you're looking at years of daily practice, even if it's 5 minutes, you know, like no one should ever underestimate even 5 minutes a day, you know, because even if you do that for 4 weeks, you know, you do that for 30 days, 5 minutes a day, you know, you'll see a subtle change in the person's character and personality. So you can imagine what a person does in, like what they can do in say like 5 or 10 years. So, you know, why does that come about? Why do we see like a beneficial effect with this very, very simple practice? And so essentially, you know, you're looking at like a refinement of one's character. So all of us, you know, can be like, I mean, the vast majority of genuine Buddhist people you find tend to be very good people when you look at the, say, the full spectrum of general society. I mean, the vast majority of the human population would rather be good people than bad or evil. You know, because, you know, even the average person in the street, even a non-religious person knows that, you know, you can see the benefit of being, you know, just basically a decent, you know, individual in general society. But you know, religious practitioners, spiritual people, because I came back from East Coast early Monday morning, and where the locality I was in, there was an ex-monk, his partner I was staying with, been a monk for 7 years, and he was interested in setting up a forest monastery. But he was saying that there were so many spiritually orientated, alternative and meditation based people on this road leading down from the back of the Tweed Valley, which is in just 10 kilometres south of the Queensland border. He said you could even go Bindabat down that road. There's about maybe 25 houses down, going over a stretch of several kilometres. And he said there's enough good people on that stretch, he said, you wouldn't starve, which was quite inspiring. So I think eventually he'll get it together over time. But you know, these things are quite sort of complicated, usually it's finances, that's usually the sticking point. Everything else is fairly easy. So we see this transformation, and so with the meditators, you see like a refining of character, so a refining of impatience and anger and jealousy and all these sort of maybe slightly unpleasant experiences we have as a human being. And you see an increase in compassion, kindness, tolerance, understanding, and you know, the ability to bear with conditions, and the ability to, you know, to see other people's angle of life, you know, their perception of life, and the ability to see another person's views and opinions in a more sort of tolerant fashion. So there are many benefits that you can see within yourself over time. So you know, you do this for long periods of time, if you're able to do this till the day you die, then you've got, and in essence as well, it increases the quality of your life. You become a more genuine human being, a more kind, compassionate, understanding individual that other people can see, maybe from the distance, or that when they get to know you, that they they can recognize. They recognize that you're a person with good qualities. You know, even for myself, you know, it's not everyone's cup of tea, but some people like to practice the loving kindness meditation on a daily basis, and it's something you can see in people when they walk through the door. They've got this kind of energy about them, which not everyone has. Meditators have a certain energy about them. You know, there's something different from, you know, when you get to see, you know, you see them, you talk with them for a couple of minutes. There, you know, they're different from mainstream people in mainstream society. People who do loving kindness, it's even stronger. That kind of effect is even stronger again. Mm. It's like a radiance about them. But anyway, I won't waffle on too long. So, I want you to get a few. We'll do a little compassion meditation. For maybe a couple of minutes, because it is quite a strong meditation. It will make you a little bit soft, so we won't go completely over the top with this one. So just maybe for a couple of minutes, and what we'll do a compassion for oneself. You don't need to do compassion for other people. You only need to do it for oneself, and it automatically moves out towards other people. Even when I did metta compassion, I don't do metta and compassion for other people virtually at all, 99% of the time. You don't have to. You just do it for yourself, because your world comes from you, your views and opinions come from you. So for inside, if you're good, you know, if you're good natured internally, it just automatically moves out towards others. And then we'll do the Anapanasati, the breathing meditation, for the rest of this session. Alright, so I want you to look at an area of your life. Could be anything, any kind of painful experience, any kind of what would you call it? Not defect, but any kind of say drawback in your life, some difficult situation. It's the compassion and meditation is based on you as an individual being free from any kind of like suffering, sorrow, difficulty, problems. Say in a nutshell, any kind of difficulty in one's life, to be free from that. So an example would be, if I had trouble with like impatience and jealousy, it could be, may I be free. This is the formula. May I be free, you know, from impatience and jealousy. May I be free from anger and worry. Could be anything, any kind of combination you can think about. But essentially, you're supporting oneself with essential emotions. So may I be free from a certain kind of experience in one's life. So, and then we'll move to the breathing meditation, and we'll focus on the feelings around the mouth, which is still a sharp focus, but it's very clear and it's comfortable. So just close your eyes, beginner's instructions, close your eyes, and just sit nice and straight, heads upright but comfortable, breathe into the full chest, make sure there's nothing tight around the tummy, around the wrists, around the neck, and the throat. So we're generating compassion for oneself. May I be free from some particular difficulty or painful experience in my life. And we'll just do that continually, very relaxed, slowly relaxed, in just for the next couple of minutes. So as you do this compassion mantra, you are generating this supportive feeling for some difficult area of one's experience or life in general. So now we're going to switch to the breathing meditation. So now I want you to focus on the feelings around the mouth. So you'll feel the breathing, the sensation of breathing on the periphery of that area of focus, but it's very, very easy. The reason I do this, it's very easy to track. One has lots of nerve endings in that area. You can follow it easily, but you still get a sharp, comfortable focus. So focus on the feelings around the mouth, and you'll feel the breathing, the sensation of breathing in and out on the edge of that area of focus. And we'll do that for the rest of the session. So as you follow the breathing in and out of the body, don't, and if any thinking arises whatsoever in the mind, don't grab hold of those thoughts, don't push them away. Just at this point, just be reasonably neutral and just place your attention on the breath at this point. you feel a little bit sleepy or drowsy, take nice deep breaths into the lower abdomen and to increase your alertness and mental energy. you find that you're still thinking excessively, just stop for 20 or 30 seconds and try to understand exactly what is obstructing you and why and where and who with and for what reason. Because the more you understand, the stuff which comes up and makes your mind unpeaceful, the more you understand these mind states, the easier it is to let them go. Because each individual, we have to teach ourselves in order to be free from different attachments and strong feelings which actually disturb the natural peacefulness of the mind. So the more you understand these emotions, the easier they are to let them go. If you feel a little bit sleepy, you can always meditate with your eyes open. the meditation develops, just try to keep yourself as physically and mentally relaxed as possible. So we're coming towards the end of the meditation, so just look back, see if you can see any change in the state of the mind. I'll ring the gong 3 times so you can open your eyes when you're ready. Did anyone have any questions on the meditation at all? Happy customers? Do you want me to give a talk on anything whatsoever? Your choosing. So what subject would you like to propose? Maybe this lady in the front. No, not you? Yep. I don't know.
What's your favourite sutta?
Oh, there's too many of them. Too many of them, Bob. But it's good. I mean, because the. Okay, let me think. This is it's actually a subject that might be relevant to some people. It's like a slight twist on I won't get sort of too technical or too complicated, but it's something that all of you would have some familiarity with. I went to visit Achan Panya at Bodhi Tree Monastery outside of Lismore, which is about an hour south of my parents' place. So he's about 80 years of age, and he's done very well over time. He's got a 100-acre property. I think he's virtually replanted the property with about 8,000 odd trees, fruit trees. He's got fruit trees, nut trees, many, many species, natives, many, many varieties of shrubs and herbs and plants and trees. And so he's done quite well over the years. He's been, I'm not sure exactly how long he's been there, but it's quite a stretch. But the trees, the whole cultivation of the forest has been very, very successful. And but he really places strong emphasis on the Mahasi, especially the Burmese Satipatthana type of approach to meditation, where you label all, say, physical and mental activity, you know, so as you're walking, so for example, if you're slow walking meditation, raising, pushing, placing, stepping, you know, so and things like when you're reaching out, you know, like reaching, touching, retracting, could be say lowering, so every single aspect of your movements, thinking, you label with this kind of Satipatthana approach. And some of you may have done courses previously, and for some people it can be very, very useful, because you're constantly describing to oneself, you're identifying and labeling and describing to oneself exactly what you're doing. Some people find the breathing meditation, walking, it's a little bit, maybe a little bit too challenging. If you're very, especially highly intelligent people, people who think a lot are quite cerebral, may find this particular practice quite useful, in the sense that their orientation is to actually understand one's mind experience, because everything comes back to the mind. You know, as you, the way you, you know, the you know, with your daily activities, the way you live your life, you know, everything comes from you, from your mind as a basis, as a center point. So what they're doing is identifying and labeling all different same physical movements of the body, different emotions, attitudes, anything at all, anything whatsoever which comes from the mind, you label and identify it. And you know, you can certainly, I mean, you're constantly thinking and thinking and thinking, but it's useful in the sense that you can identify attitudes and views and opinions, and you can potentially see things which you may not have paid much attention towards previously, because it's all about, you know, it's vipassana, it's all about insight, understanding. But then you get some people may find it quite useful. It's not everyone's cup of tea, but it does have value up to a point. But then you get, say for example, the Thai fraternity. I mean, you've got many of these centres in Sri Lanka, some in Thailand, more in Sri Lanka than but Burma would have the most, in Sri Lanka, Thailand. Thailand, with the forest teachers, they tend to put more emphasis on breathing, walking, mantra practice, and then reflecting, you know, reflecting more closely, more deeply after, say, getting some peace
of mind, because
when you're constantly thinking, you can develop, I wouldn't underestimate it, you can develop a certain sharpness, awareness, and close introspection of your personal experience. And you may find, personally, you may find it actually quite useful. But to give you an idea, like, I knew one abbot who was a very, very intelligent fellow, senior teacher, senior Dhamma, meditation teacher, teaching, like, you know, quite a large number of disciples, multiple retreats, and he said to me that he got more insight with Anapanasati than he did with 7 years of full-on, what would you call it, Mahasi Satipatthana-based practice. And he's a type of individual who would know what he's talking about. But it all depends on your mentality, your faculties. You know, some people may find this particular practice more useful up to a point. But the Buddha made it very, very clear in the sutras that to go very, very deep with the meditation practice, you've got to still the mind. Because, I mean, I can think and think, I can do this practice effortlessly, without, even though I've never trained in it, I've never done a retreat. You know, I understand it well enough, I can just do it continually. And you will certainly get a degree of sharpness, awareness, understanding, and insight, internal insight, there's no doubt about that. But the Buddha made it very, very clear in the suttas
that for deep
insight, you've got to get the mind still. You know, I can think and think till the cows come home, but you won't really see things to a more deeper level, a more precise level, until you get the mind still, because your views and opinions and your attitudes and your prejudices it's all getting in the way, and it's clouding your clarity of mind. So, you know, in order to see things deeply, in order to see more in line with the truth, with the truth of your experience, your mind's got to be still, because your personality is distorting and filtering what your experience, you know, your personal experience. So every single one of us, we all have different personalities, we all have different views and opinions and different takes and different angles on what we go through. You can put a dozen people through a particular experience, the same experience, and they'll have a slightly different take on what they're perceiving because of their personal makeup, past karma, the way mum and dad have raised them, family and friends, drug and alcohol experiences, all this kind of stuff. So, but in essence, in order to get closer and closer and closer to with greater clarity and awareness of, say, the ultimate reality experience, the mind has got to be peaceful and it's got to be still, which means that the thinking, if you really want to talk about really solid insight which has samadhi as a basis, and the Buddha said this dozens and dozens of times in the sutras, the Pali, Theravadin sutras, that the mind's got to be still, because otherwise your personality is distorting and filtering what you're perceiving. And that's why the Buddha just kept going on and on and on about real, say, deep states of stillness, which in essence means at least upachara samadhi, where the mind actually stops thinking, and then you've got a potential to come much closer to an awareness of the ultimate reality of your experience. Because if the mind is not still, or you don't have the jhanas, and you know it's in the suttas, it's you know multiple times. And you know the Buddha is not going to deceive people about this kind of experience. So the mind's got to be still, which means no thinking whatsoever. But the Burmese Satipatthana fraternity will argue this point. So as I was questioning Longpo Panya, and I hope to God he doesn't hear this on the internet, because he's a very very good monk and he's been a very compassionate, supportive teacher for many, many, many years. So he's 80 years of age. He's still, you know, putting substantial effort within the monastery, the lay fraternity. But he, you know, he's absolutely convinced that Satipatthana is the way to go. So as I was talking with him about his style of practice and his approach and this and that, because I basically wanted to draw on his experience, which must be at least, I'm only guessing, at least. He's much, much senior to me, so he's got at least, I wouldn't be surprised if he's got at least 40 years plus, 40, 45 at least. And so, you know, he knows this style, I mean, very, very well. So I drew on his insight, his knowledge, his experience. And he's going to be setting up a very, very, very pleasant lay retreat center with 40 rooms, so 20 twin room accommodation units. I think that there should be a separate bathroom complex, but very nice, you know, very simple but very very nice accommodation. He's already built his meditation hall, and he'll have the supporting infrastructure in place. It might take, I would imagine it would take, oh, it's got to take, it would have to take at least, I'm only guessing, it would have to take at least 3 years, possibly five, maybe total, by the time you've got everything, absolutely everything in place, because of council regulation and builders and engineers and all the rest of it. But that will be a very valuable facility. But he's looking for a junior person to look after that facility in the long term, but he wants a hopefully, you know, like a Burmese trained Satipatthana Bahasi Sayadaw junior monk who can basically lead and teach and manage and do all the 101 things that you have to do when you're an abbot. But they will be hard to come by. But you know, he's been, because he's got his like Buddha Net, and he's got very, very good connections, but he doesn't have anyone on board at the moment, so we'll just see how things go. So hopefully he can get someone with the skills to look after that facility, because it's going to be, you know, it's not a small thing. That job will be quite substantial. But it's beautiful property. It's absolutely stunning. And if you ever got the opportunity, book in and go stay, and you can help out a little bit, because he needs people in the kitchen. He needs people to help with the forest. And your time will be very, very, very valued while you're there. So you've got this contradiction. I won't sidetrack too much. You've got this contradiction between what the Buddha said, what the Mahasi Sayadaw fraternity say. So I mean, naturally, you know, I will side with the Buddha, side with the Thai Forest Masters fraternity. But the thing is, regardless of which way you go, that insight is the key principle. You know, it's all very nice to get peaceful, to have incredibly peaceful, joyful, blissful, happy states of mind. It's all very nice. But, you know, if you don't develop your wisdom, your insight, your understanding, you really are wasting your time to a great degree, because samadhi is not foolproof. Samadhi can fall apart very, very easily when conditions can change, things go wrong, you know, you lose your...
Good evening. Visiting hours are now over. Could all visitors please make their way out of the building? Thank you and good night.
When you're looking at an extreme situation where you've lost your whole family in a very, very unfortunate car accident, or you get incredibly sick, or some nice young, say a nice female person comes along and you completely lose your mind. So, you know, samadhi is not a sure thing unless it's absolutely solid as a rock. You know, I mean, first down a minimum, and you've got to be able to do it effortlessly every single day. That's mastery of samadhi. And that's the kind of samadhi which is very, very firm. And it can basically deal with anything. But for the vast majority of people, male or female, it's not. It's very, very fickle, and you've got to protect it to a really high level. You don't get yourself in any kind of teaching management position. You keep, you stay in seclusion in a very small community. But that kind of meditation, even Upachara Samadhi, will get you enlightened. It's that crucial. So it's not an, you know, some people, there will be lay disciples who will get that kind of experience in a retreat setting. But if you do, it means you have incredible parami. You're not the average person on the block. You know, you've got very, very strong spiritual past development to get access to that level of meditation. So it's not to be underestimated, but it will give you a very solid insight, the value it has, because if without that level of samadhi, in essence, you really can't get enlightened. There's too many obstructions, and the bottom line is that if you're a Satipatthana person, whether if you're because the monks and nuns basically can't lie, otherwise they're finished. The monastic life is basically finished with the rule structure. But I haven't heard, not to say I know, but I haven't heard a monk or a nun actually state, because you're putting your monastic career on the line, state that they actually realized the Dhamma through this Vipassana based approach. I've never heard a monk or nun actually state that in community. And if you do that, you've got to be really, really sure, virtually 100%. You know, otherwise, you know, unless you're completely misperceived, unless you're deluded, completely mentally say mentally disturbed, you know, all this kind of thing. It's got to be an extreme kind of mind state where you absolutely misperceive what you've realized. So that will be the test. So are there any questions before we wrap things up? The gentleman in the back. Yep, you with the beard.
Yeah. You mentioned it earlier before in meditation. When you're having a discussion with somebody and their opinion is different than yours, or it's a different view or values, how do you experience to say, well, I'm really interested in what they've got to say, and listen to them and their view without feeling challenged yourself and not to...
Without being challenged by that person.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what I would do, I'm not, I don't have any professional training in this area, but what I would do, if somebody comes along and they could be quite a very interesting person with new, fresh views and opinions on any particular subject. They could be incredibly well studied in a certain area or subject. You don't have to be a sounding board. You just don't have to stand there and just listen to every single word that person says. You know, you can give your views and opinions, and you can challenge them if you want to in a friendly manner. For me, I don't waste my time fighting and arguing and challenging people to any great degree. If you could come up against a person who's got an incredible knowledge base, they could be a professor of a certain area, but you're very, my father had a friend who virtually had a photographic memory, absolute minimum 97-98% of everything, absolutely everything ever read. And my father found this quite fascinating because he studied Middle East politics, history, all the major topics you can think of with world issues for 60 odd years, and so he would dialogue with Ashley, and they would be talking back and forth till 1 o'clock in the morning. To my father, he had to go to bed because he was up. He had to get up for day shift, say 6 a.m. to get to work, you can maintain your stance. So, you don't have to just, be like a, just listen and be fully receptive. You can give your own views and opinions and this and that. You just come across in a reasonably pleasant manner. The lay fraternity, I'm very fortunate, in the position I'm in, that most people are very, very pleasant, reasonable people. I've had people go off my face and really just abuse me and call me all sorts of really nasty names and whatnot. But it doesn't happen very often. The vast majority of people are very, very just very pleasant, very nice, amenable. I couldn't care less. If someone wants to challenge me, they can challenge me. I'm not a scholar, but they can challenge me on anything they like, whatsoever. I really couldn't care less. I will give them my best shot, my best angle on what I know. But if I really don't know something, I'll just say, look, I just don't have the knowledge base. Or I'll look it up for you. I'll research. I've got all the books and electronic. I can search anything. Even if I don't know, I can find it within minutes, and you can stand your ground, you can be firm, you don't have to be everyone's. I believe in getting along with people. I'm not a hard case, I don't believe in disputing and just being difficult and all this kind of stuff. You can hold your ground, you can state your opinion, but just that, to have just good relations with people. Even if I had someone challenging me from the Christian fraternity, I mean, they came around to my house on several occasions when I was at home, and I get the people next door were Mormons, but the second and third day I was there, like their friends from the Mormon church, like rolled up, because the couple themselves, they were quite pleasant people, but they were, what was the correct terminology? They couldn't speak, they couldn't hear the people from the deaf and dumb fraternity. That might be an old description of the state. So like, what would you call it? Say auditory. Was there a new name for that kind of condition? That condition you can't speak, you can't hear. Is there a special name for that?
No.
It's an impairment, some kind of impairment. Been out of nursing for a long time now, but very nice people. And within two or three days, the Mormon fraternity would come round. But they were very, very nice people, very pleasant people. And they're well trained, you know. They're trained with groups in their church, and they know how to approach people. And they're not looking to fight and argue. They want to dialogue with you. They want to connect. They want to hear what you think and how you feel about the world and this and that. And I think, you know, it's a very skillful way of approaching, say, non-Mormon people in the general community. And I spent I was at home not doing anything in particular. I was still doing at least 3 to 5 hours of meditation a day. But I spent several hours at a stretch with these individuals. And but when they realized that they couldn't make any ground whatsoever, you can't argue with me about say even Islam, Christianity. It could be Jewish doctrine. I'm not like being arrogant, but you can't argue with me on these principles at all in any way, because I know the Buddhist practice very well, and Buddhist practice essentially is foolproof. There's nothing that you can fragment, you can take apart. It's foolproof all the way from start to finish. But I'm very, very accommodating. My best friend is a practicing Christian, and I will trust that guy with my very life. You know, my friend who's my age. I've known him since I was 12. We've got an old friend of the family. He was a Christian priest for about at least 9 years. And both those people, I would trust them with my very life. I'm very, very. I have a very flexible, accommodating mentality. And you know, I'm interested in other people's views and opinions and their life experience, because there's no point being ignorant. There's no point trying to shut people out and not listening and not trying to get a feel for how people live their life and their personal experience. Because when you dialogue with different people, even if they're completely opposite to you in every single way, you know, you can still learn a lot from that person. See, you know, you exchange knowledge and experience. So, you know, it's a two-way street type of thing. Just let me know, Sarah, if we're close to time. Just let me know when you want to wrap it up. We got a little bit of time, or none at all? Does anyone else want to ask a quick question before we... See you later, bye-bye. Anyone else want to ask a question?
Yeah, I thought the extension of the same question. I wasn't thinking that I offended the other person, but they thought that I offended them.
Offended.
Yeah, they got offended by what I was telling as a joke, like, no? And I was thinking, God, I didn't mean that way, I was joking. But I said sorry, and why I said that way, no? That's right. What I left it. Is that right, or?
Yeah, yeah, because then they understand where you're coming.
No, I understand. They understood me or not, I don't know. But I told my thing and worked out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. It might have been nice if they let you know where they stand, but yeah, you did the right thing, and even if they can't accept it, it's their problem. You know, you approached, you saw the way they reacted. You did the right thing, and what more can you do? I mean, I've had one person I offended supposedly. They took offense with me a number of times, but you know, I might be just a little bit jokey, but I don't go too far. You know, I like to have I'm not incredibly intense, really rigid, straight with my mentality, so I don't mind having a joke with people, having a little bit of a laugh, and And what but this particular individual, that's not their take on life. They're not like that at all. And in the end, I can't connect with that person. I really don't want to connect with that person very much at all, because it just doesn't work. And I'm not going to change my character to please you for the next 10 to 20 years. Forget it. You know, I can get along with almost anyone, but you know, I'm not going to kowtow to you. I'm not going to please you, and I'm not going to meet your expectations or anything else. And if you don't like it, it's just too bad. So you know, but I'm just being, you know, if people are reasonable, I don't care where they come from or who they are, or whatever. You know, if they're reasonable people, it's good enough. You know.
But at the end of the day, we can count what you are saying. We perceive that experience as the mind makes us something. You are saying.
Yeah, you know, if you understand where you're coming from, it's a crucial point. So you know, vast majority of us, you know, in Buddhism, we take responsibility for ourselves. So if you understand where you're coming from, you know, then you've got a better feel when you're relating with people and dealing with stuff and this and that.
Thank you,
sir.
Anyone else? Thank you.